I don't know if you'll be the better for it, but I'll have to admit that I'm the better for it. In other words, in taking up the challenge of talking about the tzaddik on the general Indian of Torah Mada, I developed some ideas that I knew were there. I found some connections that I suspected were there, but didn't actually nail down until I had to prepare for this talk. And so I must say that I have to thank the Meisha here for twisting my arm. I don't know if you'll be the better for it, but I'll have to admit that I'm the better for it. In other words, in taking up the challenge of talking about the tzaddik on the general Indian of Torah Mada, I developed some ideas that I knew were there. I found some connections that I suspected were there, but didn't actually nail down until I had to prepare for this talk. And so I must say that I have to thank the Meisha here for twisting my arm so that I could learn something also. First of all, the question was asked, who is Rav Tzaddik and what are his dates and so on and so forth. For those of you who haven't been exposed, those unfortunate few who haven't been exposed to Rav Tzaddik, he was a Misnagid who was born in 1823 to a prominent Miuchasadikov family. His father was Rav Yaakov Rabinovitz, who was living in Kreisberg in Latvia, and he very, very soon developed showed signs of being an Eloi Utzon, not just an Eloi, but an Eloi Utzon. One of his Hasidim, I think, or maybe it's one of his stepchildren, says that at one point he told him that he spoke before he was a year old, and this is the thing. He was still nursing, of course. He would make a shahako before he nursed. This is Rav Tzaddik giving edus on himself. Obviously not in public, but in a private conversation. But that's the real. You really have to, I've got a 3-month-old, and what can I say? I don't think I'm going to have that kind of an Eloi. But at any rate, he started learning Gemara when he was 3 and a half, I think, or 3, and he made his first Sima Shas when he was 8. He never, after a certain point, he never ate except at a Suda's mitzvah, which meant that he would make a sin before the Suda. This is the kind of person that he was. He was Nifter in 1900. After having become, as a young man, and I've been, becoming a follower of Rabbi Yosef Liner, who was a Talmud of the Kutzker, and I don't have to go into the history, but he established his own Ravista and became known as the Ishbitzer. He was succeeded by one of his Talmidim, a chavar of Tzaddik, as well as having been succeeded there. There was a split, obviously, as these things happened. One group of Hasidim went with the family. I understand the majority went with Rav Leibler Eger, and then he was succeeded after some 34 years, I think, by Rav Tzaddik, who for the last 11 years of his life functioned as a Rebbe, took pitluch and everything else. We have, it was mentioned before, there are 10 volumes, something like this, of his writings that have been published, and there's almost as much of his writings that have not been published. And if you ever read, and you will now, read some of what he writes, you see that he writes in a highly condensed style, so when you consider it, really he's written a good deal more. On the other hand, there are repetitions, so I guess you have to cut it down, so we'll see. But at any rate, he was certainly very prolific. None of his writings were published during his lifetime or were published after his patira. As a matter of fact, the Gerev at the time was asked what to publish first, and he said, with Rav Tzaddik, you just publish anything, it doesn't matter. Just, go and publish. Unfortunately, quite a bit remains unpublished. It has not, Baruch Hashem, it survived the destruction of Lublin. And I understand that a son-in-law of Rav Eliyahu Kitov has the Ksavim, has spent the last 15 years or more preparing them for publication. I don't know all the ins and outs, but if you spend that much time preparing for publication, I don't know the difference between preparing for publication and suppressing publication. However, be that as it may, there's enough that has been published to give us a lot of a good idea of what he was about, and to enlighten us with some tremendous kedushim, which will really change our understanding of Torah, its function and development, and so on, radically. I published a little of that. Some of you may have read it, and I only mention it not to give myself a boost, but because either certain things I'm not going to discuss in very great detail here, even though they impinge on what I'm going to be talking about, because I read about Boromatik and I already published them, and you can go find them for yourselves. One of them is the fact that Torah is cumulative. In other words, one door adds to the doors that preceded, and once you kind of open a gate, as he puts it, you have a chiddush in Torah, that chiddush becomes common to everybody, and they build on that. So therefore, this is the standard medieval mashal of a dwarf standing on the shoulders of a giant. You can see further than the giant because he already has the benefit of what the giant sees. At any rate, I'm going to be talking about here something that I have not published on, and that is Tzadik's idea of the two books that Hashem created or wrote. I'm going to have to excuse myself, but because in order to understand the development of this idea, you have to kind of get into Hasidic, Kabbalistic modes of thought, I'm going to have to kind of take an excursus and give you a few principles and try to be mantic them also, so that you'll be able to follow what follows. But first of all, let me just give you three basic yesidus that I'm going to be talking about, and then we'll talk about the principles of development. First of all, Reb Tzadik, and this is, he's the only one that I know of, or the earliest person in Jewish thought that I know of who have made this comment, compares the world to a book. He uses the metaphor of the world as a book, and says that Hashem created two books. One is the Torah, the other is the world. The Torah functions as a parish on the world, the book of the world. That's one idea. Second idea, which is related, and which we find in earlier Hasidic thought, is that one's experience, one's personal experiences, the events that shape one's life, so on and so forth, are not happenstance, but are all planned, and therefore we have to take great care in understanding our own experiences. Something, we observe something, there's a reason for us to have observed it. If somebody, if we have a conversation with somebody and realize something, or we should realize something from it, there's something that is there to teach us. In other words, experience can also be Torah, which is another way of saying that Torah is not limited to what we usually think of as Torah. Svarim, Gemaras, Kedushin, Shana Makom, and so on. But Torah has a much broader span. And the third point that I'm going to be talking about is, alongside that, the place of quote-unquote, and you'll see obviously now why I'm saying quote-unquote, secular knowledge within the limits of power, or in regard to power, or in relation to power. Okay, now, those are the three ideas. Now, let me say a little bit about some of the ways in which they're developed. As a matter of fact, let's get the... if only because I suspect some people here have not had a one-on-one hands-on acquaintanceship with Tzadik's Svarim, or maybe Tzadik's Svarim of Klal, I'd like to help you introduce you to them. Take a look on page 1, you'll see one on the right-hand, top right-hand corner, the second passage, Yitudei Mamor 79b. And I'm going to be, and all that we'll be doing, pretty much, I'll be confining myself to the passages, the lines that are underlined.
So therefore, we'll start from that double underline, if you take my word, for the bottom of the first column. It says, where is that da? He says, ki sefer nikra ha'ikistirei chachma. He says, a sefer is called kind of the inscription of divrei chachma, words of wisdom. In other words, it doesn't matter what form the sefer takes. It can be a computer disk. Obviously, if you mean that, you can update this module. A computer disk is also a sefer because it contains divrei chachma. It's a way of recording divrei chachma. We ain't a chiddush. In Chakika, Alan Yor, Hadithra, or Al Dabar Acher. He says it. There's no difference whether the Chakika, the inscription, this writing, this recording of Chachma is on paper or on parchment or anything else, as a computer disk. Moshe Hayatar, Kodim Shidr Olam, Ayin the Medrash, Koman, Parsha Aleph. In other words, just as we know, the Torah was written before, the Yisrael was written black fire and white fire. That too is a sefer, even though it's not in the usual getter of a sefer, paper, print, and so on and so forth. But he goes even further. He says that wisdom, knowledge that you have in your mind is also a sefer, because it's a compilation of knowledge. Meaning that So just as a person writes a sefer in order to reveal or to compile, to record that which he knows, so too Hashem, with the chachma of Hashem Yisborah, also is compiled. Nigla ba'olam shivar, and that is revealed in the world that he created. In other words, you can know Hashem from the world that he created. And skip a couple lines down. Creation is that which reveals his chachma. Like a sefer in which all his wisdom, obviously we're talking about all his wisdom that relates to Bria. Obviously there are things that don't relate to Bria that would not be, but are embedded in some sense in the world. From this yisod, you can understand a number of things. You can understand, for example, why the Medrash says that Hashem, that right at the beginning, Bereshis Rabbah, that the Torah is the blueprint of the world. You see why the Zohar says he's Tachol, Kitchen, Rehul, Ra'omah, that Hashem looked into the Torah and created the world. If the Torah is the blueprint of the world, because the Torah itself contains Hashem's Tachol, and the world too contains Hashem's Tachol, you see that they're interrelated. More than that, and here's where we get into the first principle of Hasidic, one of the first principles of Hasidic and Kabbalistic thought, which may seem strange, and I'll try to kind of be masgered in a way that even a staunch Litvak might be mekabel. And that is that the Zohar says, although actually not in so many words, the Zohar is often quoted as having said this, it's not really quite the way it is there. What you usually hear is Kuchet Rifu Araisa Yisrael Kadu. Hashem Yisborah, the Torah, and Yisrael are one. What actually you have in the Chelet Gimel, and I think it's Pei in the base, is the Sninan, Gimel Dargin, Imun Mishkashen. Three Madregas are connected, or Dov to Dov. Like, there was an interpenetration, what I'm about to say, and that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Torah, and Yisrael. Let's take the last two first. Torah and Yisrael are related. How are they related? For example, Yidden have a certain shlita in Torah, a certain right in Torah. Not just a right, but for example, consider the fact, you know, minim mavakel halacha. If there wasn't some kind of a shlita and some kind of interpenetration of Yidden and Torah, then how could you explain that minim mavakel halacha? After all, halacha is Hashem's thought. Where do human beings come, even in mass, en masse, in Yisrael, a tzibur, establishing a minhag that could be counter to halacha? There has to be some kind of relation. That's one way of understanding it. Now, therefore, if Torah and Yisrael are closely related, So that means, among other things, according to Rasulullah and according to other Hasidic Kabbalistic thinkers, that the word, that the Torah itself is the shirish, is the root of the souls of Yin. Yin had a certain root in Torah. That means also, if the Torah is the map of the world, and we already talked about the blueprint, the map of the world, therefore is also the map of Klal Yisrael. The amount of Torah in every door will vary with the status, the matzav of Klal Yisrael of that door. The two are connected. Torah and Yisrael are thus connected, not only horizontally, but vertically through history. And as Yidden, and the Torah in a sense shares the vicissitudes of Yidden. Now once we already see that, then you can already jump to the first step, which is Rifu, Yoraisa, Yisrael Chadu. We know, for example, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shares the Saras of Yidden in Golos, the Shin is in Golos, the Shavish Shuspa, and so on. And so therefore here too we can see that there's a relationship, there is Kashman Zevazet, there's a link between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Yidden, and of course there's a link between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Torah, because the Torah is not Masa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so you see how you can equate one and the other, and therefore, in a sense, we are aided through Hashem in this world, and therefore, in a sense, Hashem, Chil Hashem, Kiddush Hashem, is all connected to Klal Yisrael. The matzav of Klal Yisrael, in a sense, reflects the matzav of Hashem's influence in this world. I'm going to stop here because there was one thing I intended to do, and I promised that I would do, and not promised, but I mean, I intended to do and I didn't do, and there's no good place to do it. I'm going to do it now where I remember it. And that is, I want you to know that there are two faculty members, or quasi-faculty members, on the YU faculty, two people that are around that are very much interested in the Pesachic thought. One of them is Rabbi Alan Brill, who's now teaching at IBC, and who is doing a dissertation on the Pesachic. And the other is Rabbi Tzal Nahor, who's giving a shiur from the Machshavas Yisrael in Reis, was also was published on Rav Kook, and in Adi has also compared Rav Kook to Pesachic, and as a matter of fact, in the current issue of Sinai has an article that relates to, specifically to Pesachic. And this one another, if you know, that this is not, Pesachic is not a monopoly of Chaim Berliners.
Dr. Lam
is also right, exactly, Dr. Lam is in the Paramata. But you can even be connected to one you would be interested in Pesachic. Okay. I hope that both of these gentlemen will play an increasing role in this school. Okay, back to Pesachic. So that's the first principle. Now, that being the case, then you can understand another, and again, this is not just the Pesachic, this is Chassidus Kaflal, and this is Kabbalah Kaflal. Also, take a look at the very first selection on page 1. It says, Kibi Yisrael, Kol Echad, who doubled the Menusha of the Ezer Dover, Masha Ein Bechol Yisrael, the most of the Dover Zeh. He says that every year, has some part of Torah that he is specifically suitable to, has his own chelek in Torah that is unique to him. There are certain chidushim, certain insights in Torah that everybody has, and I mean each person has, which only he is granted. And that is his chelek in Torah, and of course it's a chiv on him to develop his chelek in Torah, and the mefarsim too for that matter. He are doing the shorish nafshus Yisrael who may have Torah, son of Rebo. He says, as is known, and this is one of the staples of Kabbalistic thought, that the root of the souls of Israel is in the, from the Torah, and there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, each one reflecting one of the people who were at Matan Torah. The truth of the matter is, if you count, it's actually somewhat half of that, but what Mugbalim say is that it depends on how you count the letters, because parts of letters count also, and there's certain serufim, and so on and so forth. The point is not so much how accurate it is in terms of counting the letters, it's the concept. The concept is, as you can see, a very powerful concept, because it means that every Yid
who is anybody who's a member of Klal Yisrael has a certain shachas of the Torah that is uniquely his. Nobody can say you may, in a sense. In other words, it's not that I've heard the Shane Gogol Echad, I have to look inside, that's why I'm not mentioning his name, that he interpreted Kneged Arba Vanim Divisorah against four Vanim, the Torah spoke. And he says, we can understand why the Torah would speak against the Shane Odei of the Shol, or speak against the Tam and Avada Gavis, we can understand why the Torah would speak against the Russia. But why would the Torah speak against the Chacham? So it's very simple, because he opens the door to questions. This is not, despite the fact that the Gadol that I heard this B'Shem is not, it was known as a member of kind of the Hasidic section, you know, part of Klal Yisrael, the Mechilas Tvaydai and Lulein the Mistafina and all the other Mishanis that I could use, this is not a Hasidic idea. You're supposed to not only ask questions, you're supposed to try to find your own answers. Within limits, of course. We're not talking about fear, we're not talking about catharsis, meanness, etc. But nevertheless, everybody has own cheder from Torah, and you can't rely. You may find guidance in somebody else's cheder. You may be able to go a far distance with that person, as I frankly can do with Reb Sadek, but that doesn't mean that you are potter from finding your own derech. At any rate. The Dor HaMidbar Heim Lidnei HaTorah Shabbat Shibitzav V'Yakein Yisr B'Medrash Yidu Hayah Chasar Echad Mehem Lo Lid HaTorah. One Yid had been missing from the people who were gathered around Sinai, Torah would not have been able to be given. Because time is limited, I'm going to stop here with this, but you get the idea. Every Yid is precious, every Yid Tzedek in Torah is indispensable. That's the first idea. Another idea that you have to be acquainted with, a principle, which is also to be found in desire, is Reisha Hashoka Vada Nahara. The world is created in such a way as to require darkness to precede light. That's the way it happened in the Bria. And more than that, not only do you need darkness to precede light, but if you don't have darkness to precede light, then you can't appreciate the light. And therefore, for example, you have Shiva Mitzrayim before the Geula of Mitzrayim. Again, the same thing. You cannot really understand the light, the Giloy, the Geula, whatever it is, anything positive cannot be understood except against the background of that which precedes it, which is dark. And therefore, also, confusion is not necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of a reader that's a Aliyah. If you're not confused about something, you won't try to understand it and eventually clarify it for yourself. If you think you know it, but you're wrong, you're not going to get anywhere. You'll just remain wrong. Unless you know there's something wrong, you won't be able to find the right way. Second lesson. And then finally, and this I think will work out historically without too much discussion now, but then we'll see how illustrated, and that is the principle of Zeh u'Mazeh, one against the other. There's a symmetrical parallel development in a number of levels, but the level that we're going to be talking about, or the area which we're going to be talking about, is the Indian of Klal Yisrael and Mesolim. A certain parallel symmetrical development of Yidden and Gayim, in particular Chachmas, the Chacham of Yidden and Chacham of Gayim. Okay. With those three things in mind, and then we'll do one other 3 minutes, we should be able to go through the development of the three ideas of the Torah as the world as a book, and the Torah as its parish, and a place of personal experience, and a place of secular study through history. You'll be glad to know I've done at least 10 pages of my 26. Now, first of all, if the world is a book, and the Torah is its parish, that means that also as we experience the world, we're also learning a certain amount of Torah. And therefore, as I said before, we have to learn from our experiences. One example that the Tzaddik gives is Rebbe says in the beginning of Seita that Roa Sota Bikil Kula Yadar Asim and Yayim. So Tzaddik asks, maybe we know the Sota got into trouble. But this guy, this innocent bystander, standing there, and he sees the Sota being denigrated, humiliated. What's he got to do with it? Why Yazar asked me wine? Why should he keep from wine? The son that drank wine got into trouble. Why should he not drink wine? So the answer is, if he's standing by, then there's a lesson in it for him as well. He happens to be there, that the son, he didn't give a remnant in his mind that he may too be in danger. And therefore, he wants to take a lesson from the Sultan and also Yazar asked me wine. Everything that happens to you should then be used as a lesson yourself or anything you see happening and so on. Of course, you might learn from history, etc. He quotes Tzadikas in a number of places, and we'll see it if you go through this select passages, but I think it's already quite late. I don't know if we'll get a little much insight. He quotes from Simcha Bunim, Shista, an early Hasidic master, who said, interpreted the shame. Shaddai, Shindal Adir, remember the more familiar actions of Shaddai, and Hashem said, Dai the Olam. Hashem said, you know, for the world. The world was kind of expanding. We know that from the cosmologists, I guess. And Hashem at some point said, stop, meaning, Tilah, I don't need more world. So what we're simply going instead is that when Hashem said, stop, it's enough, he meant there is now enough in the world for Yidden, or for people, to understand me, to know that I am the one who created the world and sustains the world. Whatever we have in the world is sufficient for us to learn that lesson, which the Sadhak sees as being the essence of Torah. Without knowing that Hashem is the Borei Olam and the Mani Olam, you don't know anything, including any Torah. Any Torah that you know that's valid will lead you to that understanding. Anything you know about the world that's valid will lead you to that understanding. And that's the kind of understanding that Avram had, and as he said, he saw the world and so on. He said to the house burning was, you know, can it not be a Baal Havir? And Hashem said to him, I'm Baal Havir. And there's an interesting thing about that measure. On the one hand, we're saying that Avram learned, let's say, I don't know what argument, philosophical argument he might have used, it certainly would not have been the ontological argument, the argument in design, let's say. He learned that there is a creator of the world. But on the other hand, the Medrash says, Anihu Balavir. Hashem had to say to Adam, I am the one with Balavir. Without some kind of siyata d'shaya, Adam would not have been able to do everything. You know, there's only certain points at which you can get purely from studying the world. There's beyond that, there's a sus that his studies will give you, which will then lead you to the Seattle Shrine to understand more. And that's how Avinu, as the Liturgy Commission says, to the Christ, became a mission at the end of the conclusion that the others in the kind of Torah Kula. They obviously didn't, not obviously, but the Tzaddik would say, obviously, and it seems to remember, it's not only a question of learning, being a kind of Torah Kula through sale. Through reason. Obviously Hashem, Zion says that, the Medrash says that Hashem made, well, gave a certain day, a certain idea in Avraham, so we understand how the kind of all dark will. It's not, it wasn't done purely by reason. That is the basic difference, Zion says, between Chachmas Yisrael and Chachmas Umos. Chachmas Umos, and he talks about it, as you see in passages, you know, the doctor, for example, in Aristotle's time, says, the doctor mentions Aristotle, says it's a double pella. Aristotle lived more or less than Hashem and Sarah. And as I've shown in the article, I published on the tradition, this is one of Hashem and Sarah's time, actually, it's one of the time of the development of Torah Shalapet, the greater development of Torah Shalapet, when after you didn't accept the Torah, the late showing. So then they were given certain truth in Torah that they didn't have before. Let me
adjacent to that, for those of you who don't know the article, but that doesn't mean there wasn't fresh water before. There was a greater development of fresh water afterwards. But at any rate, that was parallel to the time that Aristotle lived. And you had a development of Kafka's device and a knowledge of Teva, a knowledge of natural science. Now, so therefore the two, again, that's the Zebulun and Zed. Just as when there's an increase in power, there's also an increase in science. The difference is this, the Musa Olam learned natural science to the exclusion of allowing Hashem into their understanding of the universe. So for example, I forget now, I think a 19th century scientist, maybe somebody will remember who it was once asked, so where what role does God play in his science or in his hypothesis, instead of going into science? He said, well, I have no need for that hypothesis. Meaning science is in the business of explaining everything without reference to any Borei Olam or any Madigo. The difference between toughness and power and toughness is just that, according to Aristotle, that we have to relate everything to our Chinese bar, which means that if we are going to take Chachmas of Umos, and he says that we that in certain points in history and to say in Gaulis, we should, we have to transmute it into Torah, and only it can transmute it into Torah. He says in a number of places, the Greek Sadiq Matesa, you'll see it here, that a writing scribe didn't learn Chachmas of Umos, and those things that were valid in secular or non-Jewish knowledge that were necessary for understanding the world and therefore understanding the Torah. Since this is such a controversial point, I actually Xerox in a number of places. Take a look at the Kitzadik Pesach. Let's see, where it is.
Fourth column over bottom. Fourth column on the right.
Right.
Take a look on the fourth column from the right on page 1. Pre-Sadik Vayikra 66B, Pesach Lion Days. It says, V'chol Umos Yesh Chachma. All the nations have their own wisdom, their own knowledge. And I'll tell you, I'm Nechaya as Kulam. V'chein ha-chachma hefi as Baleha. V'chir ha-chiyus chachma. In other words, nothing can exist without knowledge, and therefore, if the Goyim exists, then they have to have some knowledge. And of course, there's also the Medrash, which he mentions. Kedoshos. There are some holy sparks among the Umos, and also Shal Kachma, Hamachaya, or Hefya, or something. That those holy sparks within the knowledge, within the wisdom of the Umos, is what gives them a key in this world. So and so forth. Behind the Mashiach Pina, the reason for the need for our being in Gaulis, he says, and this is, as I said, he repeats this in other places, with the need for our being in Gaulis, behind the Mashiach Pisa, he strove to make Umos. The big Mara, and something, Kadesh, he toasts to our lady Gabriel, that Gabriel should be added to them, and he's not just Gabriel, and Parish Shu had himself as Kedoshos, the Holy Sparks, going back to the time of the creation when you had them the type of other yet, which was paid before, and then you had the point is that the world was in a certain amount of disorder. I'm not going to go through the Kabbalistic background. The world is in disorder, and there are Holy Sparks scattered all over, and it's our job to gather them. But the Kiddush here that I want to emphasize is that some of these Holy Sparks are in secular knowledge. Mimela is starting that Shemistan Mishet Mimehem, Lasesam Nahukai, and so on and so forth. She came eager to Pash to Toshabal Pev and Bobo, when she comes to Ola Ezra and Bobo, the Yiska, and so on. Eager Toshabal Pev is in the Babli, and the Babli is in Bobo, which is in Gaulis. Because the Yimus Olam, the knowledge of the Yimus Olam is the Hela, it's in darkness, and so therefore it has to be clarified. And Gaulis is the beginning of clarification. As a matter of fact, let's even go to the column before at the very bottom. He says, "Bahari Hibir Torah Mishachim Alidei Hahis Arbus Meku Umos." Yofan Shon says, "There are many Hibir Torah that are Mekudesh through our being mixed in among the Goyim,
in various ways. And that's one of the ways in which we gather in these holy sparks. In other words, those things that are valid in secular knowledge can be gathered in and become part of Torah by Yidden or by Chitana that are coming. Question is, what sparks and what knowledge and how do you do it? Before I finish on that note, though, let me point out one other thing, and that is that because time is a kind of, each moment in time is a unique ingredient creation. No moment is quite like another, just like no year is quite like another, no place is quite like another. So therefore, the Torah of one moment in time is not quite like another. That's how you get kind of developing. Now, he interprets as meaning that every day has its own conclusion in Torah. And if you are attuned to the universe and attuned to the Torah the way you should be, you will be able to understand those conditions of every day. And he mentions in Satsika Sasadik, you'll see it here, that the Shimra Yochai and his Kaveri, because they were attuned to the universe and attuned to the Torah of every day, the solution of every day, they didn't have to do anything, they didn't need Hanasa, because they could manipulate the universe through their solution. And of course, if the universe and the Torah are intimately connected, and we can have shit in the Torah, you can see how that might be. Now, the question is, we're talking about personal experience there. We talked about, and just to give you one example that Ritzal himself gives is a Ritzusha. An animal apparently once met a guy, and the guy had a load of hay that he wanted to load or unload, and he asked the Ritzusha to help him, and he said, "I can't." And the guy said, you can't or you don't want to. And the Ritzusha said, "At that point, I understood that the hay I saw, hay, needed to be help up. Hey, Tantara refers to the Hiskalus of Malthus Shemayim among Yid. I don't know Kabbalah, but the point is that Lashon, he understood from that incident of the guy that there was something that he had to do, and it's not a question of he can't do it, it's a question of he doesn't want to do it. So therefore he has a fear to do it. This is the kind of way you can interpret personal experience. Now the question is, what do you do about Papas Kitsanis, or Papas Mazzola? Let me say, first of all, that there are clear evidence that Kitsanis is also doing these things. The question is not whether he's also doing these things, the question is what is the daughter being also, and then who is the one who should be also. We saw Feigl when his first Hasidim says that he had, as we had seen, and the Tzadik told me, he had written Kippurim, algebra, geometry, and astronomy. And then he kind of kept abreast when he couldn't learn. In other words, one thing is he wasn't Kovea Tachnus and was all of them at peace. He learned them when he couldn't learn Torah and so on, as in the bathroom, this kind of thing. The other thing is he certainly, in a long passage of Sefer Sefonis, which I've reproduced here, he denies, as you would expect him to, vehemently, that the Rambam's idea that Tachlis HaKeva is due to Tachlis HaKeva, he says, I mean, Aristotle's science is not anything in part of Torah, and he says to Harai that we know that it's not valid. Which goes to two things. Number one, he tells us not that he knew it. Number two, that he knew enough to know that this is no longer out of science. But even much more apparently. At any rate, the person to the people who are supposed to transmute secular knowledge into Torah and to decide that which is valid and that which is not. And in Mosheh Mashiach, he says all the valid parts of Tachmas Simas Olam will become part of Torah, and at that point, Vavati Chachamim Adam. In other words, there will no longer be any Chachamim among the Goyim because all the valid Chachamim will then have become part of Torah. That's the name of Mashiach. But then who is the one who does this? Primarily, it seems from what he says, it would be the true Talmidei Chachamim of the Dor. That's one of their functions. I'm not quite sure what the Dharma of the true Talmidei Chachamim of the Dor. It would slightly clearly assume that, you know, he was one of them, and so therefore he could be Osek in these Nyanim. I suspect these days that he might be more liberal on the matter only because the true Talmidei Chachamim, as they're understood these days, are not also saying these things. So if nobody does it, it's not going to get done. Nobody else does it, it's not going to get done. But I don't know. Maybe every door has its own function, and this door is not the door, and gather those particular sparks. But theoretically, certainly, and more than theoretically, because he himself applied this to himself. It is the job of true Talmidei Chachamim to understand something about Bapa's Hatera and to take those parts of it that are valid and transmute them into Torah. How do you transmute them into Torah? You transmute them into Torah by finding the kesher of Teva within Torah. So once you understand that, I guess, you know, that would be part of it, certainly. So I think that aside from kind of a roundabout way that we could derive from the basic concept of the metaphor of the world as a book and the power of the perish on that book, we could derive a kind of a soul that would justify the study of science, but we don't have to because the study himself works it out in part. He certainly in his own library had a lot of things that he didn't necessarily want to be, you know, used by other people. I see them, even something that was a story that he once sent his buffer for a concordance that he had in the house, and managed to point to wherever he was. It wasn't, he asked him to bring it to him, but he said he should have put it under your jacket. So even that, you know, concordance would be like that in, you know, his time and his place. He clearly knew Martin Luther. Another thing that usually Hasidic Shered is keep in the house, but also Asir, you know, learning of. This is unfortunately time doesn't allow me to go much further, but if you look at the handout of the area, you'll see more of the, you'll understand more of the Dharm involved here. And now I guess I should leave the way open for some questions, so I will.
I say the floor is open.
That was another case where you had this close association There are two things to be said. First of all, there is a reciprocal and symmetrical dimension in the development of Torah and the knowledge of the second of knowledge that happens whether the Yidden are close to God or not. In other words, if there's an increase in Torah, I can hardly avoid the conclusion that the development of this Columbus has something to do with the development of 19th century science. Right. It seems to be, he doesn't mention it, but it seems to be, on the face of it. That's number one. Number two, we're talking about being among God, it doesn't mean necessarily associating with them. We're talking about knowledge, level of knowledge, power and knowledge. You can learn Kapha Sulimos without knowing a God. You can read their books. You can study science without reference to God. And it happens in the 19th century, we know something about this. There were, unfortunately, they were outdated even then, but there were books in Hebrew written about science. Say, Rodriguez is one of them. And people like the Malvin studied them very closely, as you see. I recommend to you Noah Rosenblum's book on the Malvin, where he goes into detail about the Malvin's knowledge of science. Unfortunately, it was really 18th century science. But nevertheless, the principle is still there. So the fact that you're totally isolated from God doesn't mean you have to be totally isolated from the knowledge that they accrue, which you'll accrue to them, which you then can transmute, the valid parts of it you can transmute into Torah.
Does Torah indicate any differences in the type of the categories? What sorts of Chokhmah you can transmute into Torah and what sorts you can't, or does the there is
no,
that you can transmute.
I wish you did. The one category is valid versus invalid. That invalid, I guess, would be sure that there are Chokhmahs that have very little in the way of validity in terms of Torah, that really are almost irrelevant in Torah's case. Studying that is practically irrelevant. Yeah, the basic idea is to know that Hashem is demonic and authoritarian. And anything that aids you in that understanding, how he is and how he operates and so on, that can be transmuted into the Torah. It's totally irrelevant, yeah.
Do you see a sharp distinction between the natural science and the humanities? Nature and Bria.
I think that's important. I don't think so. Science that are valid may be more important to color than those parts of our science that are valid. I can, as a matter of fact, I threatened that the question asked me, begged me not to. I can interpret Masson or Kovin in terms of the elementary particle physics.
That was your alternative lecture.
Right, that was my alternative lecture. And he asked me not to. Now, it works out great. It's amazing how smoothly it goes in. If I never get to publish it, I'll tell you the basic scheme is in the margins of my Barbanel manifesto. Kalam signs that are valid may be more important to Torah than those Pratim Har signs that are valid. As a matter of fact, I've written and the Mesh asked me, begged me not to. I can interpret Masim or Kalam in terms of the elementary hypothesis.
That was your alternative lecture.
Right, that was my alternative lecture. And he asked me not to. Now, I think it works out very amazing how smoothly it goes in. If I never get to publish it, I'll tell you the basic scheme is in the margins of my Barbanel and Tesla. That's usually a side issue. Torah is primarily concerned with human interaction with Hashem or with the Kenneth of the Welcome. And in that case, soft sciences might have a lot to tell us. About how human beings work, how their minds work, how their emotions work. Very important. So it's not clear that soft science doesn't have a lot to tell us, that we need to know for the Torah, the proper understanding of the Torah. Yes?
The other question, one of the favorite folks is his name, what did the subtle mean that he speaks to the Chachma? And I have a suspicion that the subtle and that many, many years are showing the problem. When they said Chachma, they meant either science or art philosophy. When they thought what people meant,
is that Torah is not to be diluted in the way that people conventionally think of it. It's that which you have in a certain state. Even things that you can't necessarily often have love to make favorites of Torah on, nevertheless might have been part of head of Torah, human experience of whatever sort. Obviously, I mentioned that specifically to go into that. I don't know that Sutton did differentiate from one kind of talking about it. I don't think he did. I think Valid talking, no matter what kind of talking it was. It may be that historically speaking, the talking that he knew would have been, as Rabbi says, hard philosophy and so on. But I don't know that theoretically, if you were alive today, that he would have excluded other forms of knowledge. As long as they're valid, as long as they can, either, they, you can infuse in them a certain modern with your, they're more than modern with your design. Yeah. Any other? Yes.
Regarding our scientists, you're just saying differentiating between something like physics and something like scientific force interaction with human beings. Wouldn't it be correct to say that within the makeup of physics and chemistry and biology are necessary or mustn't that relate to how man is supposed to behave in the Kelman and the Torah Sparkle. In other words, that if Hashem looked into the Torah created the world, he would also create it, the makeup of biology, chemistry, and physics as to reflect the halachas of the Torah. So in that light, wouldn't they also be, wouldn't be grounds for studying them also to understand the relationship with human beings?
We have to be careful. It's possible to use the physical sciences of the Marshall. For example, Joseph Wood Crush, in an essay that was published in the 50s, heralded that it was already 30 years out of date, the stamp out of date, but it was done 30 years before, heralded Heisenberg's uncertainty principle as a way of establishing the theory of this. In other words, a more mechanistic view of science, of Newtonian science, especially in the early 19th century by, I guess, Maskelyne and their various counterparts, the philosophers and so on, they argued against free will because they thought that, the Newton's laws suited the, they managed to be able to understand and predict exactly what everybody would do. So what Joseph was crushed with a famous American naturalism essays, literary critic, heralded Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which I assume everybody knows, you can't know the position and motion of a subatomic particle, electron in case of talking about. You didn't have to know one or the other because your measurement itself was infinitely higher than one or the other. It held that as a local deterministic theory. Aside from that, the problem with physical science is that it did not operate on the assumption that there is no need for God or consciousness. And so it's a greater challenge to connect that better than possibly other things. That doesn't mean it can't be done, but I'm not, aside from showing, I'm not sure if we are in that copy to manage to do it, just speaking purely practically. Theoretically, certainly, it seems to me, and I feel that my interest in contemporary developments in cosmology and my physics and so on, are valid on some constant level, but to make a piece of it, despite my interest, to make a piece of it as higher as opposed to Parnassa, I think you'd have a hard road to hold in a practical sense.
You seem to say the idea that certain things that occur that it doesn't shed light on the things we're trying to incorporate from outside, and therefore.
They're not clear. Yeah.
Oh, so.
But the cover includes everything. And as I said, if I take a look, the doctor this morning, Xerox. The second page, it doesn't have numbers on it, but this morning the doctor, because of that, take a look and you put in my more at the very last column, page 81B. Actually, start at the bottom of the column called Taka Tarshmit Slav Nicolas to heaven, Kol Mine Kapkon. Tarshmit Slav incorporates in itself all kinds of knowledge. Anything that he wanted, any true knowledge that he wanted to reveal to his creatures is included and embedded in Tereshmitzah. The challenge is to get it out. Now, sometimes you can't get it out very easily, and so therefore you learn it from the world and then you relate it to Tereshmitzah. And so therefore, in the next column, in the top there, he says, that's why, at the very bottom, he said, it's much more unresolved. The time is like immediately the letter release of their horizon. And then the Omer of Kamas, Adidei, we know how Milsa, the Omer of Inche, all kinds of proverbs that are brought in. The question is if these are valid proverbs, which Gemara assumes, that there must be some place in the Torah that you can learn out from. And that tells you that all true Kamas is already in the Torah, whether we can get it out easily or not. In other words, if I use my classes, who tells me that I mentioned this before, there's a letter sent as an item of Thomas Thomas on which the second law of thermodynamics depends. Because the Torah is a map of the universe, a blueprint of the universe, a model, a scientific sense of the universe, Hashem, look at the Torah created the world, and obviously every all physical law is also embedded in the Torah. The question is, as human beings, how much shyness can we work out in Torah and to our relationship to our Torah and our proper relationship with Beit HaMikdash, can we work out from this? In other words, think about it. In the Torah, yet everything is valid, therefore interrelated. Therefore, there are times that there is an expansion of Israel and there could be a time where I'm going to respond to a contraction. It seems at the moment we're in an expansion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Osai. If there any of you have suggestions generally